This is The Game Show with Max Sussman, brought to you by The Gaming Stadium, Canada's leader in esports.
Welcome to The Game Show, presented by The Gaming Stadium here on Sportsnet 650. I'm your host, Max Sussman, and today we're staying local again and talking to a guy who we had on the show well over a year ago now, I think. But that time he came to me as kind of a representative of Vancouver Street Battle, and we didn't actually really talk that much about him. So today we're going to do that. We're going to actually talk about his career and all that stuff. So let's get right to it with Christian Pence, a.k.a. Gecky, right now on The Game Show on Sportsnet 650. He is a general fighting game player, but we know him from last time as a Street Fighter player. Also a commentator, now as well a tournament organizer. He is Christian Pence, a.k.a. Gecky. Gecky, thanks for joining me here again on The Game Show.
Thank you for having me.
So, like I mentioned in the intro, when you first came on, you were kind of, like, handed to me by Kenny, who sent you my way to talk about Vancouver Street Battle. He's like, here's Christian. He's a Street Fighter player.
Yep.
But now it looks to me like you've kind of become more of a Fexel player.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of coasted off somewhat of Street Fighter. Now I'm more focused on fighting EX layer.
What pushed that shift?
I think basically because at the time and throughout the last year or so, I've been playing so many fighting games, and I'm trying to do it like all at once. Basically, every stream I had, I would rotate what fighting game I'm playing, but still trying to keep Fexel and Street Fighter among them. But it just became too difficult, and I felt I was stretching myself thin. And while I think it was fun to, you know, explore a lot of fighting games, but I wanted to kind of hone in on the games I cared about the most, which were Street Fighter and Fexel. And Fexel is my favorite fighting game of all time. So, and that game is a super small game, very tight-knit community, and Street Fighter is one of the big popular fighting games out there, you know, immediately recognizable among esports and among the FGC. So I just decided what would be more beneficial is to support Fexel in any way I can, since I already love the game anyway. So I just decided to dedicate all my stream time, most of it anyway, and the time I practice into Fexel. I'm hosting weeklies every single week on Sunday at 12:30 p.m. PST, and it's open to the world because fortunately the game has rollback netcode, which makes it amazing to connect with players across the globe. And I'm currently finishing off a website, which is a complete guide for the Fighting EX Layer game. And I've gotten help from all over the community, top players, all that sort of stuff, and just putting it together to have it be a complete guide for anybody that wants to pick up the game in any sort of sense and educate them on all aspects of the game.
We're talking fighting games with Christian Pence, a.k.a. Gecky, here on The Game Show on Sportsnet 650. You almost sound like you've become a little bit of a Fexel evangelist. Like you've dedicated yourself to promoting and growing the community in that game, which is perfect. Because my very next question is, mm-hmm. You know, I've watched Fexel. You actually introduced me to it last time we talked, and then I watched you play in it at the Pinnacle and stuff like that. I've seen some Fexel; nice. It's been fun. But for somebody mm-hmm. who's never seen it played, and maybe has only seen very huge fighting games like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. Evangelize, sell me on Fexel.
Okay, so if you ever looked at old fighting games, like, you know, the older Street Fighters, like Street Fighter 2 and whatnot, and you see a lot of people talk about them in a way that, oh, this stuff is broken, this stuff is like old school, this is stuff that's hard to execute, all that sort of stuff. So a lot of that stuff is in Fexel, but the great thing about it is that it's kind of modernized in a real accessible way. The best way I can describe the gameplay of Fexel is probably, it's like if you take many aspects of Street Fighter, like the specials, the types of like combos that you do, sort of, and then the speed and neutral of King of Fighters, you would get Fexel. And then on top of that, you throw in a lot of old school aspects with a lot of crazy sounding mechanics and power-ups and all that sort of stuff that's sort of like Capcom versus SNK2 grooves. So basically every character has access to 15 different decks, and the decks are individual, has five individual gogi, which is the main mechanic of the game. And they're essentially, they give abilities to your character, and if two characters share the same deck, they can be still played in a drastically different way. So it's kind of a way to, you know, add more sauce to the characters that already have some sauce, if that makes sense.
So that adds, like, it makes it so there's kind of infinite permutations to even any given mirror matchup within the game, right? Like, you're never going to get the same match play the same time. It's the same way every time, eh?
Exactly. Well, and the great thing about it, too, is that it takes a lot of stuff on the surface that sounds crazy. Like, for example, there's gogi decks in the game that give you infinite super meter. There's decks that give you super armor for the rest of the match. There's things that give you a full screen jump that always tracks where the opponent is. There's stuff that gives you a teleport that tracks the opponent and always appears right in front of them. So from full screen, you can be point blank in less than a split second. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that like looks broken, but the great thing I love about Fexel that I find a lot of newer fighting games don't really have the hammer on anymore is that a lot of the stuff that's strong is earned through your skill as a player versus the game giving it to you because you're either losing or because that's just how it works. So anything that's strong can be circumvented by how strong you are as a player. Whereas in games like Street Fighter, if, like, I'll give you an example on Street Fighter. So, for example, if Birdie, the character named Birdie, plays a character against a character named Ed, who is one of the newer characters in Street Fighter V, there's a move that he does called EX Bullhead. Now, EX Bullhead is the move where he does a headbutt, and he does it twice, and it goes basically full screen. It's incredibly fast, almost impossible to interrupt, especially on reaction. And if it's blocked, it's actually safe against most of the cast. There is a handful of the characters that have long enough normals to reach and actually punish it, but some of those punishes are very specific and per character. And it's usually not as much damage or not as big of a reward compared to if Birdie lands it successfully, which is very common, right? But the thing is, if you pick Ed, no matter how good you are at Street Fighter V, and no matter how good of an Ed player you are and how much you know about the Birdie matchup, you'll never, ever be able to circumvent that situation in your favor. So there is no way for you as a player to discourage the Birdie player from throwing out that move. But in a game like Fexel, the strongest thing can always be circumvented with game knowledge and your player skill, which is what I love. So
high skill ceiling.
Yeah,
is what
definitely.
That tells me. Yeah.
Yeah. And the great thing about it, too, is that it's called Fighting EX Layer, but just like Shrek, like an onion, it has multiple layers. So the great thing about it, too, is that even if you're just starting out and you don't have good execution, because when I started out, I had pretty basic execution. I'm probably an average at best. But over time, there are things you can do that are really strong at the surface level, as long as you have good fundamentals in fighting games. And then you can slowly implement higher damaging combos or make better decisions that lead to better damage, better situations for yourself. And it's especially with, for example, like if you anti-air someone, if someone jumps at you and you hit them out of the air to stop them from jumping at you, most characters have a universal crouch heavy punch that perfectly hits them like that. But you can always add more. So once you have that down, you can add like a unique attack to add a little more damage. Then from that level, you can go to doing a super. And then even more difficult, you can add a special move instead and then combo that into super. And then from there, you can go even higher than that. So like, there's always levels of accessibility that help you get more comfortable with the game, but you're still able to do things that are necessary to be good at the game, if that makes sense.
We're talking full name. I guess we're just talking Fighting EX Layer right now with Geki on the game show on Sportsnet 650, because I've gotten more Fexel questions.
Please.
You mentioned it a few minutes ago, and I mentioned it in the intro. You started organizing. You started kind of becoming a bit of attorney organizer yourself. Mm-hmm. My first question is, why would you subject yourself to that?
To be honest, I love the community aspect of fighting games. I truly enjoy seeing players interact. I love seeing unique matches happen. I think I have just the mental capacity to tolerate a lot of bullshit from people sometimes. So it's not that hard. I think a lot of people that have trouble is just because I'm already streaming anyway, and I've ran a few events on the side when I was at VSB, like just side tournaments for like, you know, random fighting game that I like. I've done it for Fexel, I've done it for Power Rangers, I've done it for King of Fighters 13. Basically, just a handful of games that would not be a mainstay in this generation, for example. And it felt great to do. And online, I find it's even easier in some ways, just because you can, you know, sit comfortably at your desk, manage everything through some browsers. The hardest thing, obviously, is interacting with players, because if they're in the chat, you have to hunt them down. If they're not there, calling matches usually is pretty straightforward. And commentating, I can just handle myself because I already streamed that kind of stuff, and I can just, you know, yell over it, right?
You're already a caster.
But exactly.
I did my, like, so early on in COVID, my buddy had a birthday, and we're like, what do we do? We can't throw a birthday party. So he's like, oh, maybe we should do like a video game, like something. So what I ended up doing was organizing a little, it was like 16 people in a Rocket League tournament. And it was all friends of mine and people that I could like text directly. It shouldn't have been that annoying, but man, was it annoying to run this thing. And my first, I was like, I can't, and I've come to know a lot of people who organize esports tournaments now, and especially online, I guess, it feels like herding cats. I guess if you just have a high tolerance for that, that means you're built for it.
Well, and I also think the biggest frustration for me in hosting tournaments is usually nothing during the tournament or after, it's the thing before. So I'll give you two examples. So the biggest gripe for me when hosting tournaments is the initial time I post the sign-up page, and it has all the information in the description, has the time, like right when you click on the link, you see the time, the date, the time zone, the full description, like it's on this console, it'll be streamed on this location, this is how you check in, this is who you report to, any issues, blah, blah, blah. And who it's open to, you know, wired connections only, no Wi-Fi, whatever. But the biggest thing that happens is most people will ask still, oh, when does it start? Oh, what time is it? Where is it? Is there a stream? And then not only that, the second thing I have the most trouble with is people signing up late or on the day of, because sometimes I will get, you know, two people signed up, one including myself. So there's basically one person signed up until Saturday night. I go to sleep, wake up because it starts at 12:30 p.m. I get up usually at around 10 to like set up and prep. And at 10:30, 16 people sign up. And I'm like, come on, guys. Like, please. Because you're not only hurting the organizer. And obviously, it's a lot better for me because it's a free tournament, so it doesn't cost any money, obviously. It's just time investment. It's sort of like a local sort of setup. So just I want people to get experience and have fun, get as many matches as they can, and have a great time. But when I have to do seeding, it's much more difficult to seed bigger brackets. So imagine if there was 100 people. That would take me much longer than the half hour I have in time when I start my stream to when I go live with the tournament, right? And not only that, it discourages people from joining if they are looking at that link before the tournament starts and they see, oh, well, why would I join? There's only two people that are in the bracket. When in reality, there's always 16 people by the end of it, right?
Yeah, I've noticed that with the weeklies I've played into. That it's just like 5 p.m. from us for a 7 p.m. tournament, and somebody's like, hey, anybody playing tonight? Oh, yeah. And then 12 people sign up.
Yeah, and I don't mind that if it's a, you know, spur of the moment kind of thing, but when it's like I always have these weeklies at the same time, same day, and it's nothing has changed. The only thing that changes is that one week I do PS4 and then I do PC on the next week, so I just keep rotating. And crossplay is coming, so eventually I won't even have to do that. It will just be the same thing every time, so it'll be very easy to just understand that this is a normal thing in the schedule, right?
Yeah. Is there anything that now that you've had experience organizing tournaments and being on this side of the table, after years and years of being a competitor, is there anything you look back on like, that probably irritated the tournament organizers?
Oh, for sure. Joining multiple games and not communicating enough that your matches are finished. That is the worst sin known to man. I can't believe how many people I've reported it much later, or they would hunt me down and ask me for the score, and I would just keep playing, and then not, you know, knowing that how big of an impact it's making because I'm holding the bracket up but not reporting the score. So later down the end, I started, you know, reporting everything, hunting down, making sure people are saying what the score or the result was. But yeah, it's. You don't realize it until you have to organize something yourself.
We're talking to Christian Pence, a.k.a. Gecky, here on the game show on Sportsnet 650. Let's talk about just, like, fighting games in general, because I've always thought of you as just, like, a kind of a champion of the smaller fighting games, of the small community fighting games, but also you like Street Fighter, and you're just an overall FGC person. It's a pretty land-dependent economy, right?
For sure.
For most games. How has COVID changed life for you as a fighting games competitor? Like, are there games you stopped playing, games you started playing because they work better online, stuff like that?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely toned down a lot on Street Fighter V playing. And I basically, any game that had rollback netcode that I was already playing, I put more time into that. I tried other new games like Fantasy Strike, for example, that have rollback netcode. It also was free, so I thought, why not try something that's free? Because anything that had a poor online experience that I also couldn't get a local experience from, usually I just dropped it off. And since there's no local experience happening, I thought, what was the point? I did try competing in Street Fighter V in a few tournaments, but I found the online experience, even though I was extremely close to the people, like relatively close, the experience was still not good enough. Even I competed in the North American West Capcom Pro Tour event, the first one, I think it was about a month ago, and I got top 16, and the matches were decent enough. And then when I got into the top 16 to play my first match on stream, it was literally the worst match I've ever experienced online. So I kind of stopped entirely.
That sucks. Why don't all fighting games just have rollback?
I think it's a combination of things. I think because basically American companies and basically North American companies have all adopted rollback netcode or GGPO, like some form of rollback. And they're always improving their online experience in various different ways, through engagement, through rewards, through, you know, customization and titles, unlockable stuff like that. And I think it's also a combination from ignorance from the Japanese, but at the same time, they're also prideful in that they don't want to take from others and put it into their product. They want to create their own, but they also don't see a problem because we're also buying their games and they're shipping it that way and we're not complaining about it. It's only up until like 2 or 3 years ago that people really started echoing, you know, for improvements to online. And some games like Bexel and seemingly Guilty Gear are leading the charge into rollback netcode and crossplay. We just have to wait and see if like the next wave of games coming from these companies is going to be adjusted in that same way. If not, I feel like they're going to be left behind because it's more and more common with every new game that comes out. So if they don't, I think they're just going to melt away.
It's weird that you say, like, it's true though that like the complaints didn't reach a noticeable pitch until a couple years ago about fighting game netcode, but it's like always been a thing that was known that a lot of fighting games had really, really bad online experiences. Right. Anybody who's ever just like tried to play like a Soul Calibur on PlayStation 3 online, you've experienced it.
Yeah.
It's weird though that it took, I don't know, I've always felt that the fighting game community is super passionate, but the developers don't seem super passionate about esports a lot of the times. I don't know. You'd want immediately if you want a competitive title. You need good netcode.
To be honest, it feels extremely out of touch because it's almost like they don't look at things in the West and see Because, like, for example, Killer Instinct, a game that came out in 2013, which was basically a few years after Street Fighter IV's revival, and that game came out and kind of restarted the FGC in a sort of sense. That game had everything fixed and figured out, basically, outside of a few things in training mode that could be further optimized, like having a solid record option for guard or wake-up response, like how most modern fighting games have it. But the thing is, their online infrastructure was perfect. And even the devs that worked on Killer Instinct today say that they could have made it even better. So for them to say that is completely ridiculous and have all this information out there for how they did it, you know, and it's just crazy that Japanese companies do not take that from them. And it's sad that it's uncommon and that Fexel, like the Arika, the company that made Fexel, is literally the tiniest company among all the Japanese games. Like, they're, because people say SNK is small, people say French Bread, that the company that made Undernight, is small, but Arika is about under 10 people, and there's only two or three programmers in the game. And they took delay base, so the game launched with delay base netcode, which is most common in Japanese games that you'll find, or fighting games, I should say. And in about a month and a half's time, they went from announcing that they're testing rollback, launching a beta for it on Steam, having the players test it, give feedback. They did two or three revisions of it, and then they officially dropped it after the Japanese fighting game dev roundtable. 10 minutes after the event, they dropped rollback on PS4 and PC, and then 2 weeks ago, they dropped a patch to further improve the netcode. So it's honestly not about money. It's not about not having the means to do so. It's that, do you want to do it, and do you care about the people playing your game? Do you want them to have a good experience? And the answer for most Japanese developers is they don't care.
Yeah. We're talking fighting games with Christian Pence, a.k.a. Geki, here on the game show on Sportsnet 650. I'm going to do something that I've done. I don't think I've done it to you before, but I've done it to many people. I'm going to take a question I asked to somebody else, and I'm going to ask it to you so my listeners can compare and contrast.
Sure, please.
Do you know Daniel Rosen from the Score Esports? You ever hear of him?
I have not.
He's their fighting game nerd at the Score. Anyway, had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and I asked him why he thought Japanese fighting games are so much worse online than American fighting games. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you his answer in a second, but I want you to answer that question. Why do you think Japanese games don't have the kind of netcode you need for a good online experience?
I think it's an attitude problem.
It's like an old, like, we've been doing this for a long time like this. We're going to keep doing it like this.
Yeah, I think they want to, generally, obviously not all Japanese companies, like I mentioned, but I think generally it's an attitude problem and their lack of willingness to look outside themselves and looking at where people have been successful and then taking from that and implementing it themselves.
That's interesting. Obviously, there was no chance you were going to give the same answer, but that was so far from what he had said as well. My original theory was that a lot of these fighting companies that make fighting games have been making these fighting games since the 80s, when playing online wasn't a thing, and their bread and butter was just making a game that you put out complete and you never touched it again. And they're just like old companies, right? That's similar to what you said. Now, what Daniel's opinion was simply that Japan is small, and delay-based netcode does work in Japan. But as soon as you leave that ecosystem and you talk about trying to match players in Seattle against players in Texas, that's like such a bigger distance than anything that exists within the nation of Japan that they just don't test for it. It doesn't occur to them, maybe.
Well, what's interesting, though,
the community speaks up.
Yeah. But the thing that's interesting, though, is that that's not even the case, because even in Street Fighter V, where they have Japan-only tournaments, there is tons and plenty of footage that the top players in Japan, like of all time, like Tokido, Daigo, all these top Street Fighter players that are like legends of the game and that have great success in Street Fighter V. And they show their matches and they have massive lag and terrible experiences.
After the break, more with Geki here on The Game Show, presented by The Gaming Stadium on Sportsnet 650.
You scrim, you play, you win at the Gaming Stadium, Canada's first esports arena and Canada's leader in online esports tournaments. The only place to play in local tournaments for whatever game you're great at. Online tournaments all week long with all your favorite games like Fortnite, Call of Duty, Valorant, TFT, Rocket League, and more. At Canada's leader in esports, visit thegamingstadium.com for more information.
Less likely to tilt you than playing with teammates who refuse to play the objective. You are listening to The Game Show with Max Sussman, brought to you by The Gaming Stadium, Canada's leader in esports.
Welcome back to The Game Show, presented by The Gaming Stadium. Let's get right back to my chat with Christian Pence, a.k.a. Gecky, here on Sportsnet 650. Let me bounce something off you, because I want to see... I just had this thought. Because the fighting game community, I think we all agree, is very different than any other esports community.
Yeah.
Look at a company like, say, Riot Games, right? They make League of Legends, they make Valorant, they've got a couple esports titles, but specifically League of Legends, in and of itself, it is obviously worth their time and money to invest in that as a competitive title because the community is big enough in League of Legends.
Yeah.
Now, the fighting game community as a whole might be as big as the League of Legends community, but the fighting game community isn't a monolith, and neither is the developers of the games, right? So to Arika, it might be worth it to really care about their competitive scene because they're such a small company. To who makes Street Fighter? Is it Bandai Namco? No, it's Capcom.
Street Fighter made by Capcom. Yeah.
Like if you're
Bandai,
if you're
Capcom, is Tekken.
If you're Capcom or if you're Bandai, Tekken is one game that you make and you're this huge company, right? And is the Tekken community big enough that it's worth the time investment into Tekken as a competitive title, right? And I know Tekken's a great fighting game to watch, as is Street Fighter, but I wonder if they find it that worth it as a company, because the fighting game community, when you get down to it, is about individual games, right?
Right, for sure. Well, the interesting point you bring up is that, is it worth the amount of effort to do it just for the sake, like, are you going to get a bigger audience and all that sort of thing? And the interesting thing is, like, if you listen to the Japanese roundtable that happened several weeks ago, they do talk about ways to get more players to play. So they are interested in growing their audience. But what they fail to realize, and this just confirms that how ignorant they are, is that there's plenty of evidence that shows when fighting games that have bad netcode get updated with good netcode, the sales skyrocket and the engagement from the players skyrockets. The players also get to play more people because now they can connect with more players. So let's say you have a tiny, tiny scene with like 30 players and there's no more, there's no less. But if you have crappy online experience with delay-based netcode and not rollback, you're only probably able, unless those people are within your area, you're not going to be able to play them with a smooth experience. And that's usually the case. Usually they're scattered across the world. But if you had rollback netcode, you could play all of them all the time and have a good experience as long as they're not on complete opposite ends of the ocean. You know what I mean? Like if they're
right.
The only experience I ever have with Infexel that's rough is if I, in Western Canada, play someone in Africa. In my tournaments every week, have people from Great Britain, we have people from Austria, we have people from Italy, from Central America, people in Asia, and it's across North America, and it's never a problem.
It's literally when it's the opposite side of the globe.
Yeah, exactly. And even then, it's still okay. It's just not, you know, the great almost offline experience that you expect. But it's still playable to a degree that you could work around it. It's just not preferred, obviously. And to answer your point, the thing with fighting game developers thinking that, you know, is it worth it? But the thing is, like, if you look at Garou Mark of the Wolves, which is like an older SNK fighting game, it recently, I think in the last 6 months or so, or it might have been a year now, but it got a patch, but done by this company called Code Mystics, and they've been recently updating SMK games on Steam to include rollback netcode, and those communities have seen a massive boost in engagement. If you look at the Steam charts for when the patch dropped, you can see how much it jumped. You can see the amount of players playing the game. You can see events being held for that game, and you can see more people purchasing the game as well. So I think the way to make a bigger, like the way for them to reach higher audiences and to have more people playing their game more often is to just focus on the online experience. Because if you look at League and Rocket League, they both have great online experiences, plenty of stuff to get and to constantly enjoy the game, and it's just never a problem. People don't play fighting games, not only because it's a niche genre, but the online experience is just not enjoyable.
Yeah. And that was always what, like, the games that I played as a kid, you know, like couch versus against your friends, that I was good at were Soul Calibur and Tekken. And I remember getting, I forget which Soul Calibur it was, the one that had, like, Darth Vader in it on PlayStation, I think.
Oh, yeah, Yoda. I think it's four or five?
Yeah. I got a PlayStation, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be able to play, like, I can play Soul Calibur online against people. This is going to be great. Because I'd played Call of Duty online, and it works really well, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, that's that's not what happened. So I just never bought another Soul Calibur game again, because it just wasn't a fun experience.
See, it's because your own experience hindered, like, no matter how much you like a game, if you can't play it with other people, and if the only way to play with other people is they have to be in the same house as you, you're not going to stick around and play that game. Doesn't matter all the great loot you can get, the great customization options you can get, or the great titles you unlock, or the colors you can get. If you can't do that, then no one's going to play it. No one's going to actively play it long term. No one's going to support the game over time. Like, it's just going to die off, and you're just, and then they're not going to learn. People aren't going to want to pick up the next one, and you're going to just sour the impression.
And I never enjoyed single player, like, going through the ladder in fighting games, right? Like, that's not beating the AI. I get no sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. I enjoy it from time to time, or when I'm just learning a new, brand new game, I don't mind doing that. But eventually, for most people that would play fighting games, they need a good online experience because they need to play people. They don't get satisfaction, like you said, by beating an AI.
We're talking fighting games with Geki here on the game show on Sportsnet 650. Let's do this one. I've mentioned it a little bit, but pre-COVID, at least, you were already sort of a jack of all fighting games. You played a lot of different things, and you also competed in a lot of different things. Like, I think you were in, like, everything at the pinnacle. Except
basically,
for Smash.
Yeah. Actually, no, I was in Smash.
Oh, I didn't even see you in the Smash bracket. That's funny.
It was too big. I was gone early though, so.
Yeah. But like, again, you were introduced to me, and you were known to me as a Street Fighter main. Now you're clearly a Fexel main. But besides Fexel, what other games are you still playing competitively? Is it just Fexel right now?
I am focusing most of my attention on Fexel, but I'm still keeping up with other fighting games. Like, because the thing is, like, I've played so many fighting games for so long, and I think once you build a good foundation of fundamentals, you can transfer them over to other fighting games and not really lose any proficiency in other games. Because, like, for example, when I got top 16 at the Capcom Pro Tour online event for North America, I spent a month playing Fexel, only Fexel. I didn't touch another fighting game for the whole time. And I didn't even practice for Street Fighter until, like, the day of. The day of, I played maybe 30 minutes just to, like, get my combos familiarity back. And then, then I jumped in and got top 16. So, honestly, you don't need to play the game for hours and hours and hours every single day to have success. So, I play other fighting games usually off stream on the side, but I'm playing other things like Street Fighter Alpha 3. I love that Street Fighter title, so I'm trying to learn it properly through Fightcade. Also playing Mortal Kombat 11. I just love collecting the skins and the gears, so I'm totally addicted to that. also playing games like Samurai Showdown V Special. That game is incredibly fun, and it's one of the SNK games that got rollback implemented by the Code Mystics. And I just love the feel of the game. It's incredibly old school, but also has a lot of cool mechanics in it.
So I want to go a little bit dark with it because you're like a fighting game generalist and you follow many games, whereas I kind of only pick and choose the best. I like a Sonic Fox is fighting. I'll watch that. Like that's the way that I consume it. But I think that anybody would agree that it's been a rough 2020 for fighting games in general.
Between
COVID, the problems arising from COVID pushing everything online to Evo being flat out canceled, there was like a ton of sexual misconduct allegations involved in that story, and a ton more that came out not related to Evo in the Smash community and in other games within the FGC, specifically sexual misconduct as it relates to minors. Just a lot of it. Do you think that those two big tidal waves of I would say problems, to put it lightly, do you think that that's done irreparable damage to the FGC?
To be honest, that's really tough to say because I ignore a lot of the drama and a lot of the bullshit. I usually only speak up when I feel I can contribute something of value, because like I'm not a hugely popular member in the, you know, online on Twitter and whatnot. So I feel like anything I say won't really get looked at too often. But I think it's damaged the perception of communities, and I think it's made people more aware of certain behaviors. So I think it's a good thing that these things came forward, because they've been happening for years and years already. And they've been similar cases in across all these different games, just varying to different levels. And the only way to stop behavior like this is noticing the smaller interactions between people and the stuff that's on a small scale. Just you can stop and call out the stuff on the big scale. Because obviously big things like, you know, child molestation and sexual harassment are incredibly terrible, but they're much easier to identify than, you know, toxic behavior that's very subtle, or, you know, slight objectification of women, or mistreatment of women, or mistreatment of, you know, people of color. So I think you have to be just very careful and be much more aware of yourself and your surrounding, and just call people out. Like, don't be afraid to call people out and hold them accountable.
Do you worry that Evo will never be the same? Because it was always kind of this mecca of fighting games, right?
Well, they did have a good response, like the Cannon brothers, in removing Joey from his position of power, and they completely denounced him. So I think obviously it did taint the picture of Evo. I think they might rebrand, but at the same time, they were so connected to, you know, Evo and what it was at the beginning, that I'm not sure if they would rebrand. I would recommend that they do it just to kind of get away from that, because Joey was the face of Evo for years. Even I was a part of the Anime Evo tournament scene for hosting Fexel's tournament, and they were even considering changing the name for next year, because the branding is just so close. Even though they have nothing to do with Evo itself, they just took the namesake just to honor Evo, so now they feel it's kind of tainted as well. I think there's recovery from this, just for people, you know, being better going forward in general, especially people in power like the TOs, the organizers, the supporters, the sponsors, and just speaking out, and just, you know, putting policies in place so these things don't happen, or at least it's easier for people that aren't as efficient at dealing with this, in that they have something to look to for, you know, conduct and policy for dealing with this sort of stuff. So I just hope that going forward, everyone is held much more accountable, and there's like a clear set of guidelines and rules for people in power to use to sort of, I wouldn't say punish is the right word, but, you know, discourage and stop this terrible behavior.
How do you see, like, coming out of this, say, COVID era, coming out of this, how do you think the fighting game community will have changed permanently once, I guess, we return to a more normal way of life?
I think obviously until a vaccine is created and it's massively distributed for COVID, I don't think anything is going back to any sort of normal, to be honest. And I know people are trying to, you know, by having like insanely small gatherings, everyone's wearing masks and, you know, sanitizing, everything's being checked and double checked, things are being distanced, but at the same time, it's just, I feel it's just not worth it to, you know, put people's health at risk just for the sake of that you want to play someone in a game in person. So I think when it does go back to somewhat of a new normal, I think organizers and venues are going to be much more careful with, you know, spacing, having physical distancing in place, having, you know, I don't know, because I feel like you just can't go back to the way things were because of the pandemic. It's just not realistic. I don't know what that normal is going to look like, but I imagine that people will just be extremely careful when meeting people, since a lot of the times when you come into a fighting game venue, you're going to meet a handful of people you've never seen before, and not everyone has good hygiene. And not, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just mean people.
I was just going to say. famously kind of smelly community, right?
You can say that. I just mean that people don't have the same standards for etiquette. So some people will, you know, cough into their arm. Some people will cough to the side, right? Some people will shake your hand. Some people will hug you. You know what I mean? It's just different. Mm-hmm. Ethics and manners and that sort of thing. So some people, you know, will cough on their arm or cough on their hand and then wipe it away. Some people will go wash their hands. Some people don't wash their hands as much. Some people, you know what I mean? It's just when you mix all these kinds of people, and especially when you have international tournaments like Evo, yeah, and you have all these people coming from with different cultures, different possible illnesses can come from there. This is how pandemics can start. So I think it's extremely dangerous, and you have to be, it's nothing but extremely cautious going forward, even when the pandemic is somewhat over.
We're talking to Genki here on the Game Show and Sportsnet 650. Put your Street Fighter commentator analyst hat on for me. I know you don't play the game so much, but I know you still follow the scene.
Oh,
who is Vancouver's best local Street Fighter player right now?
I think right now it's probably Mortzy, Alex Morton. He is amazing. He's grown so much. I think in such a small amount of time, it's utterly ridiculous. And the thing is, people always say that Canadians, you know, don't have potential. They don't have the skill involved or the skill that's necessary to win the tournaments, to win events, to do well when compared to, you know, other North American, other players in America or internationally. But Alex has been grinding insanely, and he's been getting better and better results every single week as he enters Wednesday Night Fights, which is it's opened up to Canadians now, so you can enter if you'd like. And he's been getting top eight pretty consistently, and he just got into grand finals just yesterday, and I can see him winning probably in the next week or so. So I don't imagine him stopping anytime soon. So he's definitely the best, at least West Coast Canadian player for now.
I was first exposed to him when he eliminated Justin at the Pinnacle, with just incredibly entertaining Fang play as well. Mm-hmm. Like it was fun to watch, and I had him on the show I think like 5 weeks ago. I had him on during the period where I've been taping from home because of COVID. So somewhere in the last month, and I was astounded to find out that he had like never competed in a fighting game until Street Fighter V, basically, or Street Fighter IV, like the very tail end of Street Fighter IV.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically a baby when it comes to competitive fighting games.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why it was so interesting, because it took me, like, I think maybe it took longer for me, maybe because I grew up playing fighting games, so I had a lot of like terrible casual baggage to unlearn, and like, you know, I would just be stubborn and not change certain things because, you know, it was all muscle memory at that point. And so I had to unlearn. Right. I think unlearning things to become better is much harder than being a baby at something, because you can just excel. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at the time I was getting better as well, the resources were much, much smaller compared to nowadays. Like there's a lot less. There was basically no YouTube. There was just some content on forums, talking with people at the arcade or seeing people playing in the arcade. And the thing is with the arcade stuff, if you weren't there at the arcade at that time, or you didn't talk to that specific person, you would never know about a certain skill or a certain technique or whatever it is. So I think having the internet be the way it is now for the FGC, I think it helps people who are especially fresh just can take it and hit the ground running with the player growth. So I'm not surprised that Alex is so good, but he's also amazing already. So, yeah.
Now, I asked you my original Final Five your first time on. There's no point re-asking those again. It's going to be the same answer. What's your favorite game of all time is probably still the same answer. So I'm going to make a brand new – I made a brand new top five for you, but it's just one question, and that is just give me your top five best online experiences in fighting games. Which five fighting games are the most playable online?
So we're talking the entire experience. So that's, you know, the rewards for playing online, the like everything about it.
Sure. Yeah, you can answer it that way if you want, or you can answer just like which is the best from a competitive standpoint. But however, it's your final five. It's your list, baby.
Okay. I think Killer Instinct. I think Mortal Kombat. Power Rangers, Battle for the Grid. I would say Fighting EX Lair. That's four, right? I think
that is four. Yeah.
Okay, and then the last one, I would give it to. I would probably give it to Phantasy Strike.
That's so funny because I asked Daniel Rosen from The Score the same question for his final five because he's been on like eight times, so I was out of ideas. That's where this comes from, and he did the same thing. He said Killer Instinct, Mortal Kombat, and then he started struggling. Which shows you, though, that even all these games that we've talked about that have gotten improvements recently, it's still a problem in the industry as a whole.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's insane.
So you went Killer Instinct, Fexel. You went Killer Instinct, Mortal Kombat, Power Rangers, Battle for the Grid, Fexel, and then what was the last one you just said?
Oh, I already forgot what was the last. Oh, I said Fantasy.
I blanked it.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I don't remember what Daniel's top five was, but it definitely had Power Rangers and Mortal Kombat as well as Killer Instinct. I don't think Fexel was in there because I remember being like, "Well, what about Fexel? I've heard Fexel's got great netcode." Because I think I heard that from your Twitter. That is that's the final five with Christian Pence, aka Geki, and that is the show. This is the part though, Geki, where I let you promote yourself. Let the people know where they can find you on Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, MySpace, Christian Mingle, wherever you're on the internet, let them know where they can connect with you.
I own Christian Mingle, by the way. No, but you can find me.
Throw that into the list. That's the first time I've thrown it into the list. I'm glad you laughed. I was worried as I said it.
It makes sense. So, yeah, you can find me at Geki_CP. That's for my Twitter, my Twitch, my YouTube channel. And also for Discord as well. And I stream every Sunday at 12:30 p.m. It's the Fexel Weekly. I post it on my challenge account, which is also Geki_CP. It's in the Fexel Discord. It's in my Twitter profile. I always tweet about every week. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and that's, again, if you're out there and you're a Fexel player looking for someone to play, he's got a pinned tweet for a Discord that you'll find people to play with and tournaments to play in. Christian Pence, Geki, thank you so much for joining me here on the game show.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
That's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much to the champion of the indie fighting games, Geki, for joining me. And thanks to our sponsor, The Gaming Stadium. Just like all the fighting games we talked about, all of their tournaments have moved online. So head to thegamingstadium.com for all the information you need about that, where to register, when to play, etc. I am Max Sussman. You can find me on Twitter at TrulyAtTheMax and on Twitch. Sometimes with a parrot on my shoulder while I play. You can find me there at twitch.tv/MaxBussman. And as always, thank you for listening. Until next time, whatever you do, don't tilt.